I'm here to tell you today that we need each other. We need each other. I can't do this life by myself. I can't be a good husband by myself. I cannot be a good parent by myself. I cannot be a good church leader by myself. And you cannot be, and I cannot be, a Christian, a passionate follower of Jesus Christ by myself. Accountability is one of those subjects that people don't really like. I don't like to be held accountable, and most people don't like to be held accountable. But as Christians, we've got to hold each other accountable in our walk with God. Now, the Christian world has come up with these accountability groups, and I think accountability groups have their place. There are people that need that kind of group in order to continue to maintain sobriety or purity or things like that. I think they have their place. But one of the things that I learned about people who are in addiction, people who are going through shame-based sins, is that they tend to lie. And I remember when I was first started preaching, I was working with a guy that was dealing with alcoholism, and he was struggling with it, and we got him on the right path and got things going, and then all of a sudden, he falls back into it. And what I didn't know is he was lying to me about some things that were going on, and I was devastated. And I called the person that I had been talking to that was counseling me on how to counsel him, and they said these words to me. They said, "All addicts are liars, Neil." And I thought, oh, if I had only known that. There is a tendency among all of us, though, that when it comes to shame-based sin, we tend to lie. I mean, if it has to do with, oh, well, I got mad today, or I was frustrated in my driving and I didn't act very Christian, we all go, oh, yeah, well, we understand, it's all right. But if I were to come in here on Sunday morning and say, hey, I watched porn last night, your mouth would drop. As a matter of fact, as soon as I said that, all these heads come up. Like, what did he just say? You see, there's something about shame-based sin that makes accountability group difficult. And the other thing is, without authority and consequence, an accountability group becomes just a pity party. In other words, if somebody comes in and confesses the same sin week after week after week, doing the same thing over and over again, it just becomes a pity party because there's no consequences or accountability in that. So why do we need accountability? Well, we all have a traitor within. Everybody in this room has a traitor within. We all struggle with sin. If you'll turn over to the front page real quick, it says, if we claim to be without sin, this is verse 8, if we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. So anybody in here thinks, well, I have conquered my sin. I do not sin anymore. If we're telling ourselves that or telling other people that, we are basically lying to ourselves. We are deceiving ourselves. The second thing that I have in here why we need accountability is because anonymity breeds sin. If you're going through this world and you have nobody to hold you accountable, you have nobody that is watching you, that's going to breed sin for you. Because what you do behind closed doors, nobody sees, nobody judges. As a matter of fact, at just about every airport there is in this country, outside of the airport, there is a store there that people wouldn't go into if they were living in the town where that store was. I heard a story several years ago about this strip club that opened up in town, and it was a very conservative town, and the people of the town tried to fight the strip club because they didn't want it in their town. But evidently enough people had gotten paid off and enough things had happened that this strip club opened up. And so right across the street from the strip club, people began to protest, but that didn't stop it. But what stopped it is when they put a sign up that we are taking a picture of your license plate and you walking in here, the strip club went broke. Same thing with you. You know, when you see that there is a camera up, don't you act a little different? I know for me, sometimes when I go into the shopping stores and there's a camera there, I look up and the first thing I do is I'm like, how do I look in this camera? Aren't you a little more careful when you go through a stoplight and you know there's a camera there? When it turns yellow, you hit the brakes hard because you don't want to get that ticket? Number three, the Christian life was not meant to be lived alone. I cannot live the 59 one another commandments without others. There are a lot of people in the church. I was having this conversation with Richard Hammonds today. We were talking about life groups, people that were in life groups and people that were not in life groups. And he says, Neil, do you think there will always be people who refuse to get connected in life groups? And I said, yes. And we talked about it for a few moments because a lot of people just want to come in here on Sunday morning and have an association with the church and be a quote-unquote member of the church, but they don't want to have those deep relationships. They don't want to have that opportunity to really get to know someone. And in doing that, if you just come in here on Sunday morning and you don't have deep relationships with other people, you are never, ever going to be able to fulfill the 59 one another commandments that are in the Bible. But the question is what does biblical authority look like? And the first thing I've got on your notes there is it's transparent. It's transparent. We all live in houses with windows. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Nancy does every morning when the sun comes up is she opens up the windows to let the light in. But I'm going to tell you what she does every night, especially when she gets her makeup off and the lights come on and it gets dark outside, she shuts those curtains. And she does it for my benefit too, because I walk through the house however I want to, and sometimes it's just not pretty. At least that's what she says. But here's the thing. We need to be transparent in our walk with God. We need to have the curtains open from time to time so people can get into our lives. One of the reasons why life groups are so important is so that you can be transparent. That doesn't mean you walk down the aisles of the church confessing every sin you've ever had. That's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is walking with somebody and letting them know your struggles. It's an open curtain policy. Look at what Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 3 says. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. Now, what's going on in my house, God sees all the time. But what's going on in my house, you only see when I draw the curtain and let you see. And we need to keep the curtains open, because the more we are, I'm going to tell you this, if Nancy left the curtains open all the time, I would be much more careful about what I wore around the house. And don't get any ideas about leaving the curtains open, Nancy, so that I'll dress better. But there are some things, there's times when I've gotten up in the morning and I put on a certain pair of clothes or certain things that I'm wearing around the house, and I'll just be honest with you, sometimes I just like walking around in my underwear, and I know that's a horrible visual for you guys. But I just like walking around in my underwear, but I won't dare walk outside like that. And there's things in our lives from time to time that is just like walking around in our underwear that we wouldn't dare do outside. We wouldn't even dream of doing. But we need to have the windows or the curtains open. James chapter 5, verse 16 says, "Therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." And I want you to write next to your notes on this, sin loses its power when it's confessed. Sin loses its power when it's confessed. And a lot of times for those of us who have been in accountability groups, for those of us who've had people that we've prayed with, people that we confess sins to, for those of you who have been in that situation, you know what I'm talking about. When the sin is in front of you and you have nobody to ever talk to about it, it has power over you. But when you have someone in your life that you can sit down with without being judged, but being encouraged and being prayed for, and say, "These are the areas that I'm struggling with," and you can confess that sin, it loses its power over you. Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16 says, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl," and underline these words, "instead they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house." We are to be the kind of people that is a light to the world. There, we're going to go out in the world. We're going to show others how to live. We're going to show others how to love. We're going to show others how to act. And in doing so, we're going to be that light that gives light to the whole house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So the second one that I want you to hear about today in terms of accountability is an open to correction. And that basically is, the door is always open. Now, before you move on in your notes real quick, I want to just, by a show of hands, how many of you in here like to be corrected? We got one, two. I'll correct both of you after service today, because you shouldn't be like that. Second thing is, how many of you dislike being corrected? Just raise your hand high. How many of you hate it? Raise your hand really high if you hate it. Okay, really high. You didn't raise it really high. I'm correcting you. Okay. All right, I want you to look at this next verse here. Proverbs 12:1. "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction," help me out here. Help me out here, all of you raising your hand, help me out. Come on, I'm calling you out. I raise my hand. It says, "is stupid." You know, we talked a few weeks ago about a biblical mindset. And if there's ever a place in my life I need a biblical mindset, it's right here. You see, I've spent my whole life trying to make sure that I take all the kinks out of my armor. I spent my whole life trying to make sure everybody thought, "Well, Neil's got it together." But the reality of it is, and the thing that I've learned in my old age here, is nobody has it together, and I am so much further beyond where I should be because of the grace of God than I was, but I am not there yet. And we need to all realize that someone who hates correction is stupid. Now, this open door, or the door is open, is something I learned when I was in corporate world. There was a boss that I had, and he sat down with all of the employees, and he says, "You know, I have an open door. If you have a problem or you have something that you want to talk about, you just come right on in. And if you see something wrong, you come right on in my office and you tell me what's going wrong." And I remember as a young guy, I took him for his word and I went in and told him something he was doing that was wrong and he shouldn't be doing it. And I was looking for another job in a few weeks. But we need to have this open door. We need to be open to correction. That's what the passage is talking about here when he says that if you hate correction, you're stupid. But he says in here, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. And we want to know what we're doing wrong. Have you ever seen anybody that has come into your life and you can see something in their life that is just glaring to you? And they don't see it? Have you met anybody or run across anybody in your days that's pointed out something to you that you've never noticed? I tell you, one of the things that I hate is I hate sometimes when I'm eating and you know how that piece of lettuce gets stuck right here? And you'll be eating with somebody and you look at them and you think they got a piece of lettuce right there, they got to feel that, and you forget about what they're talking about, you forget about what's going on, and all you can do is focus on that piece of lettuce. And then you have this debate that goes on in your mind, do I like this person enough to risk our friendship over a piece of lettuce? By the way, I'm going to tell you right now, if I'm eating with you, I have a piece of lettuce, a piece of pepper, whatever it is in my teeth, feel free to tell me about it. I'll take care of it. But I remember this guy, he sat down with me and he watched me and I had food in my teeth and he watched me and he watched me and he watched me and we got outside the restaurant after I was being friendly with everybody, talking to people in the restaurant and all this kind of stuff. I must have looked like a complete idiot with food hanging off the side of my face. And we walk outside and he says, Neil, the whole time we've been in there, you've had this little piece of food right here. You might want to get it off. And I'm like, why are you telling me now? Same thing goes true with the sin in our life we don't see. It may very well be that we don't realize we have a sin in our life we need to take care of. There's been so many times in my life people have seen blind spots that I have not seen. And they've shared with me, Neil, you need to watch out for this. And I'll go, really? Why? I remember an elder coming to me one time and he said, Neil, you need to really watch your off-the-wall comments. They're going to get you in trouble. And I'm still working on that. Because I don't know when to shut up. Well, what does that open door look like? I've got two Old Testament examples from the Kings. First of all, y'all are familiar with David and Bathsheba. Most everybody, even if you've only been to a church for a few years, you know the story of David and Bathsheba. It's a really interesting story. It's got all kinds of intrigue. It's got all kinds of sex and violence in it. As a matter of fact, it was the first R-rated sermon I ever did when I talked about that. And I remember after I got through preaching about David and Bathsheba, one of the little girls came up to me and she says, you know, that's really not appropriate for kids my age. And I said, talk to your parents then. But David saw Bathsheba while he should have been off to war. He saw Bathsheba. He looked upon her. He lusted after her. He sent for her. They spent time together. And she became pregnant, and what did he do next? Well, he tried to cover up his sin by sending her husband home, having him come home and sleep with her. And he was such an honest and forthright man that he wouldn't do it. And he went back to the battle, and David said, look, when he's in the heat of the battle, you just have everybody withdraw and leave him out there all alone to die. So within 1 month, David commits adultery. And he murders somebody. And God sends Nathan the prophet, and he says to him, you've got a problem here because there's this rich man and there's this poor man in your kingdom, and the rich man has lots of things going on, and the poor man, he only has this little lamb, and he loves this little lamb. He loves this little lamb. It's like a daughter to him. And the rich man has a guest coming in from out of town, and instead of killing one of his own animals and feeding it to his guest, he goes and gets the man's lamb. And Nathan says to him, "What should be done to him?" And David's words, "He must die." And then Nathan reveals to him, "Hey, this is you." And look at what it says in 2 Samuel 12, verse 12. "You did it in secret, but I will do this thing in broad daylight before all Israel." And that's the end of Nathan's punishment that's coming to David. And then David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." Nathan replied, "The Lord has taken away your sin. You are not going to die, but because by doing this you have shown utter contempt for the Lord, the son born to you will die." And in all of this, what I want you to see is that David did some harsh things, but David, when he was confronted with those harsh things, David admitted his sin. And so many of us today, when it comes to having transparency in our life, when it comes to having open to correction, we're not open to it. We rationalize everything that we're doing, and we don't take sin seriously in our life. And David is an example of somebody who has an open door, who's open to correction. And then I've got another king here, another great king. His name is Uzziah, and Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king, and he followed the Lord, and he did everything the Lord wanted him to do, and he did all of these great things until he got to a place in his life where he had become so powerful and so well known that he forgot what his job was. And it says in here in 2 Chronicles chapter 26, "But Uzziah became powerful. His pride led to his downfall," and I want you to underline those words, "His pride led to his downfall." And I'm here to tell you that because so many of us who've grown up in the church, who have never done anything sinful in terms of what the world would see as a big sin, we get prideful, and that's when the downfall comes. "He was unfaithful to the Lord his God and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense." And you say, "Well, that's not that bad, is it?" You see, in those days, the king had a place and the priest had a place, and the two of them were never to try to take each other's place. And Uzziah's coming in here and he's saying, "I'm going to go in here to burn incense to the Lord." And Azariah, the priest, with 80 other courageous priests of the Lord, followed him in. They confronted the king, they confronted King Uzziah and said, "It is not right for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. That is for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who have been consecrated to burn incense. Leave the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful, and you will not be honored by the Lord God." And here's Uzziah's response. Uzziah, who had a censer in his hand ready to burn incense, became angry. While he was raging at the priest in their presence, instead of saying, "You're right, this is your job, I have my job, I am going against the Lord's will here," he is raging against the priests. "Before the incense of the altar in the Lord's temple, leprosy broke out on his forehead. And when Azariah the chief priest and all the other priests looked at him, they saw that he had leprosy on his forehead, so they hurried him out. Indeed, he himself was eager to leave because the Lord had afflicted him." And on the next page, King Uzziah had leprosy until the day he died. He lived in a separate house, leprous, banned from the temple of the Lord. Jotham, his son, had charge of the palace and governed the people of the land. The difference was not that one had consequence and the other one didn't have consequences. They both had severe consequences for their action. The difference was one was open to correction and the other was not. And I'm here to tell you today that we need each other. We need each other. I can't do this life by myself. I can't be a good husband by myself. I cannot be a good parent by myself. I cannot be a good church leader by myself. And you cannot be, and I cannot be, a Christian, a passionate follower of Jesus Christ by myself. And I say this to you because so many times we think being a part of a church is coming in here on Sunday morning and sitting down and hearing these gourmet sermons and singing a few songs and giving some money and going on our way. But folks, that is not what God called us to. He called us to correct each other. He called us to build each other up. He called us to love each other. He called us to forgive each other. And the 59 one another praises that are in there. He called us to that. And if we're trying to do this life alone with no accountability, we're not going to make it. I've got in your lesson notes how to receive correction and when to give it. And when somebody comes and they try to correct you, and I'm going to tell you this, being a preacher, I've received a lot of correction in my time. And what's really funny to me, I had this one guy, I remember him so well because he wanted to meet with me every Tuesday. And I'm like, well, okay, if you want to meet every Tuesday, we'll meet Tuesday for breakfast. And we got together on Tuesday morning for breakfast, and he sat down with me, and he told me how my sermon should have been better. I'm like, okay, you're right, it could have been better. And every Tuesday morning, he would correct me and tell me how I should have done this and what I should have done there. And the crazy thing was, this guy had never preached in his whole life. And I got to the point where I actually was starting to resent him. And so I twisted things around and I said, you know, you're so good at this. I'm going to be out of town. Why don't you preach while I'm out of town? I came back in town. I didn't hear him preach. I was out of town, came back in town. We met for breakfast. And I said, how did it go? And he said, well, you know, such and such said I should have done this and I should have done that. And I said, thank you, Lord, for letting him know how it feels. But I'm going to tell you this about his correction. There was some truth in it. And I've had this tendency my whole life to take what people say and just say, well, you know, what business is it of his to try to tell me what to do? Or you know, you got somebody that's got blaring things going on in their life and they're trying to tell you how to fix yours. Here's what you do. Letter A, look for the ounce of truth. Look for the ounce of truth. There's a lot of people that are going to come to you and they're going to say, you need to do this or you need to do that. And you're going to look at the hypocrisy in their life, but you may not be able to see the hypocrisy in yours. So look for the ounce of truth. I've been treated unfairly at times. People have said things to me that have been unfair. because they don't know the circumstances that came about. And I got to tell you, when people treat me unfairly, I have to tell Nancy. Then after I tell Nancy, and she doesn't fix it, by the way, she just listens and nods her head, and she gets that righteous indignation with me, and guess what? It doesn't go away. So I've got a secret weapon. I tell God on them. And when I tell God on them, God points out, here's what God points out. He says, you better be glad they don't know everything, Neil. We've got to learn to look for the ounce of truth when somebody is coming to us with some correction. Letter B, with Christians, we need to speak up. With Christians, we need to speak up. I've struggled with this because there are some people in my life that I don't know very well that I know are Christians, and I know some things that are going on in their life that shouldn't be going on, and we need to speak up at times. And I'm not saying that what we need to do is go through the directory and find out, well, who was not here today, and I need to call and correct them on that. I'm talking about people you have a relationship with and people that you care about. When you see something going amiss in their life, you need to sit down and you need to talk to them about it. You need to speak up. It says in Galatians 6, 1 and 2, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. And then it says, but watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burden, and this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If you see a sin in my life, you need to point it out. And I'm not talking about, well, Neil, you should wear a tie on Sunday morning, because that's not a sin. As a matter of fact, if anybody in here can tell me where Jesus wore a tie, I will wear one. And if you want to talk about why Jesus dressed, I am not wearing a robe up here on Sunday morning. But if you see a sin in my life, something that I need to correct, I want to correct it. And I'm going to be honest with you, because that's what we need to be. If we're going to be accountable to each other, if we're going to be open and honest with each other, I'm going to tell you how I work. If you see something in my life that I'm doing wrong that I need to correct, I'm not going to take it well at first. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to get pretty defensive. And secondly, I may even try to rationalize what I'm doing. But I will take it, and I'll go back, and I'll let God use it, because I want to glorify Him in my life. C, letter C, with non-Christians, mind your own business. Just mind your own business. If they're not Christians, just mind your own business. If you've established a relationship with them and they come to you and they ask your opinion on something, then you can give your opinion on it, or you can tell them how you would handle it, or you can give them advice. But when it comes to non-Christians, you just need to mind your own business. And that doesn't mean you shut the garage door and you don't have anything to do with non-Christians. What it means is that you're not going to condemn them for what they're not doing or should be doing. I've got a neighbor next door. I love this guy. Except for 2 o'clock in the morning when he comes up on his motorcycles and he's been drinking all night. He's a little loud. Thankfully, I'm on the other side of the house. I don't hear him that often. But I don't go out there and I don't condemn him. And when every other word is a foul word, I just listen and try my best to not let it affect me. I don't condemn those who are spiritually dead. I'll let God do that. But here's the one that I put in my notes, and I put this in here for me more than anybody else. With those, and I'm speaking of those in the church, who won't listen, save your breath. For those who won't listen, and I'm speaking to those in the church that I've talked to over the time, and I've tried to counsel, and I've tried to work with, and I've tried to help, I just save my breath. Because it's not going to do any good for me to continue to talk. Look at what it says here. Do not speak to fools, for they will scorn your prudent words. I've worked with a lot of people counseling and trying to encourage, trying to help people make decisions in their life that are better for them, to encourage them, that in the long term is going to put them in a better place, and they refuse to listen. So I quit wasting my breath. But it's hard on me. Because I've been places and I've done things, and I know that the outcome of most of those things that they're going to do is not very good. And I love them, but I do know that my words are not reaching them. Each Lord's Day, we sing an invitation song. When we sing that invitation song, it's an opportunity for us to look at ourselves. When I was growing up, I remember listening to my dad's sermon, and I loved when you heard the books pull on the back of the pew in front of you. You could hear them scrape, because that woke me out of my trance. And I could, oh, it's almost over. And I know my dad had to see the smile on my face, because when he did, he always preached longer after that. Now, we don't have books that we're going to pull out so you guys know it's time to wake up. But I'm going to tell you this. We sing this invitation song not because that's the way we have to close the service. We sing the invitation song because we want you to look at your life, your walk with God, and your walk with others, to see if you're living up to what God has called you to. We sing that invitation song not just so people will have a chance to publicly respond, which we encourage. If someone needs to be buried with Christ in baptism, we have everything ready. If someone needs prayers, we will have prayer with you. If someone needs to confess sin publicly, we'll be glad to help you with that as well. But the invitation song is not just for those people. And that's what I thought growing up, is that we sing this invitation song because there's some bad people in the audience and they need to get it right. Well, let me explain this to you today once and for all. We're all bad people in the audience. And we all need a Savior. And we all need to listen to the invitation of Jesus Christ. And we all need to reflect today on what we're doing right, what we need to change, and how we can improve. The lesson is yours as we stand and sing.